Hello, this is Tim Lightfoot, the director of the Huff Hines Institute, with just a little pre-podcast explanation. During the summer, instead of just letting you go without podcasts, we've decided to start running our Best Of series. These are podcasts that the staff here have particularly liked in the past, and so we're going to replay them. You can never play these enough sometimes. Let us know what your favorite podcasts are. Send us a note at huffhinesinstitute@hlkn.tamu.edu and tell us who you remember, what podcasts you like the best, and we'll run those for the remainder of the summer. Have a great summer, and on to the podcast.
From the beautiful campus of Texas A&M University, the Sidney and J.L. Huff Hines Institute for Sports Medicine and Human Performance in the Department of Health and Kinesiology brings you the Sports Medicine Podcast. Our mission is to make sense of and connect the science, practice, and application of the latest findings in sports medicine and human performance to the real world. Here's our host, the director of the Huff Hines Institute, Dr. Tim Lightfoot.
Well, hello, everyone. We're glad to welcome you back to the Huff Hines Institute Sports Medicine Podcast. Thank you so much for taking the time to download us and tune us in today. We are so glad to have Dr. Mike Sandlin with us today. Dr. Sandlin has his PhD from Texas A&M and is a clinical associate professor here. And we have Dr. Sandlin with us today, though, for another reason, and that is he is one of the premier ultra runners in the country. He's been doing ultra running for over 25 years. Including in 2001, he ran the Appalachian Trail. Now, many people are proud of the fact when they hiked the Appalachian Trail. Well, Mike ran it in all 2,167.1 miles of it in 65 days and 2 hours, which still stands as the sixth fastest time in history of the Appalachian Trail. Well, welcome, Mike.
Thank you. It's good to be here this morning.
Glad to have you here. Yeah. So help us understand, what are ultra runs?
Well, technically, an ultra run is anything beyond the standard marathon distance, which is 26.1 miles. So a lot of them are 50K, which is a little over 32 miles or, 31 miles. And then they have 50-milers, 100-milers. And then for the really crazy people, they have multi-day races.
And so you have done, we were talking a while ago, and you've done how many of these over your 25 years?
You know, I quit counting, but I would imagine probably over 100 ultramarathons, and I've done over 100 marathons. And, hey, it's just another way of saying I'm getting old.
The question that has instantly popped into everybody's mind that's listening to this is, why?
Well, you know, that's a good question because I asked myself that same question. And when we were doing the Appalachian Trail 10 years ago, someone asked me about halfway through it, said, now, why are you doing this? And, you know, I really didn't have an answer. And my daughter had the best answer. And she said, well, because he started.
Oh, there you go.
So it's like, hey, if I started, I might as well finish it. But I really do a lot of these ultra runs mainly because I've always been fascinated about what the human body can do physically, mentally. I think a lot of times we set limits and they're way too low. And then as I get older, I think it's interesting that, yes, I'm getting slower and not as fast as I used to be. Raise the bar on what we can do.
Mm.
Yeah.
Now, is this something you started doing when you were 3 years old? You said you've been doing it for 25 years and you look pretty young at this point.
Yeah, thank you. I'm glad you're not filming this. I've always been active, but when I was in undergraduate school, I was a tennis player. Went to college on a tennis scholarship and really enjoyed that atmosphere and the competition. And then when I graduated from college, I had a coach in undergraduate school that had a philosophy that if you get beat in tennis, it's not going to be because your opponent is in better condition, but it's because they're better than you are with the skills. So he ran us a lot. And I was probably the only one on the team that said, hey, let's do it. And I enjoyed it. So when I got out of undergraduate school, I kind of kept running because you didn't have to have a partner. You could do it on your time schedule. That's kind of what kept me going. And I really enjoyed it. Did a lot of the road racing scene, shorter distances and all when I was younger. And then I heard about this thing that was new back then that's not new now. It was this trail running. And I thought, let's give this a shot. And I got out there, and it was just so much fun to be in nature. And the scenery and listening to the wildlife and things, it's totally enjoyable.
Well, and that's interesting you say that because I think somebody asked you before in the past is, why do you like to do ultra running? And that's what you said is like you like to get out in nature.
Yeah, I like to play. I'm sorry, exercise and recreate as adults. But
playing's
yeah.
okay.
Yeah, people always ask me, well, do you listen to music, et cetera, when you're out running and stuff? But if I'm on trails,
right.
I seldom have any music on it. I love listening to the sounds of nature.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, you had shared with me in the past that you started doing marathons at first,
mm-hmm.
and you said that you weren't that fast,
mm-hmm.
but you had a lot of endurance. Now, just uh-huh. for the record, I'd like for you to tell people, like, what was your kind of your marathon times that you
okay.
were writing?
Again, this was 30 years ago. My best marathon time is 2 hours and 18 minutes.
So for the listeners listening, that at that time, that was probably 12 minutes off the world record.
Yes, something
yeah,
like
something
that.
Like this. So this man claims he's not fast, but yet he was running close to the world record.
Well, when you compare, yeah, 2:18, and back then the world record's like 2:09, mm-hmm. something right in there. And you know, I did all the bigger marathons, like New York City Marathon, Boston Marathon. I think I finished, let's see, top 20 in Boston 3 times.
Congratulations!
Yeah, yeah, I got me a medal. That's before they gave money.
Mm.
Yeah, and it's like. About the time I started slowing down is when they start giving me prize money.
Yeah, well, that's the way it always happens.
Yeah,
isn't it?
Of course.
Yeah.
And so what I found was I could run 2:18, 19, 20 right in there fairly consistently. And then as I started getting a little bit older, slowing down, I noticed that I had good endurance.
Yeah.
Even though I was slowing down, I could maintain a decent pace for a while. And so I thought, well, let's try a 50-miler. I'd never had done an ultra before. And I did not change my training or anything. And so I did a 50-miler, and lucky enough, I won it. And I said, hey, this is good. So I kept doing it.
Yeah. Now, you know, I think context is always important. And so many people, we see these marathons on TV or these longer runs mm-hmm. on TV, and people say, oh, you know, the world record's 2:09, and you're going. And what I always want people to stop and think of is that a 2:18 marathon, that's what? 5:50s pace?
Yeah, about 5:15, 5:18.
So that's every mile. You're running a mile every 5 minutes and 18 seconds.
5 minutes and 18 seconds.
That's pretty fast. I would challenge anybody listening to this, and there are a few people that could do it, but to go out and try to run a 5 minute and 18 second pace for just 1 mile, much less 26 miles. And your ultra times, though, are fairly fast as well. So let's even say today, 25 okay. years later, what kind of pace do you average in a mm-hmm. say, a 50-mile race?
You know, I would say 50-mile race doesn't sound that fast, but probably, I'm trying to guess, it probably somewhere I can do probably about a 6.5 hour 50-miler now. On a good day.
So you're looking at 7-minute splits.
What's interesting is a lot of times I don't really worry about my splits.
Right.
I really listen. You've heard me say this before. I really try to listen to my body.
Hmm.
And if I feel like I'm going a little fast, I'll back off. Mm-hmm. And I usually like to try to run the first half of a race a little bit more conservative because I know what it's like to go out too fast and watch everybody
I do, yes.
pass you.
You pass them at first
yeah.
and then they wind up passing
yeah,
back.
Yeah, ego goes down really quick.
Yeah. yeah. So how is training for an ultra different than training for a marathon?
Well, I would guess the biggest difference is you really need to allow your body to be on your feet for a good number of hours. Mm-hmm. A lot of times, like with marathon training, it's a lot of speed work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you do a lot of interval work. Back when I was running fairly competitive, I was probably running about 100, pretty consistently at 100 miles a week, and probably the longest run would be 20 miles or so. And with ultra distance running, what I found is because a lot of them you're out for, you know, 20 hours, 24 hours, something like this, you need to be on your feet. You know, you go out for a 5 or 6 hour run and try to do one of those every week just to allow your body to be adjusted for that length of time.
Right.
So it's more just doing a lot of longer distance runs.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and it comes back to, we'll come back to the longer distance runs in a minute, but it comes back to there's a little different philosophy with ultra running. A friend of mine, and as I did one of those a long time ago, he said it's not about finishing fast, it's about finishing.
Yeah, and what's really kind of cool about a lot of these trail races and endurance runs, you know, everybody's competitive, you know, at some level.
Sure.
And, you know, if you're not looking for the overall lead, you have age group categories, mm-hmm. and there are a lot of people like doing that. But what's really fun about a lot of these ultra-distance runs is it's really a family.
Mm-hmm.
And if you see someone else who's having troubles, you know, I've been out where people share their food with me or their drinks with me or whatever. Mm. You're really kind of pulling for each other because everybody has the same goal, is to get across that finish line.
Right.
And so it's a little different than maybe your shorter road races.
Sure.
Is that it's more family taking a challenge.
Well, you know, something even as small as talking to people as you run. I mean,
right.
I've seen as you said, the shorter road races, no one talks to each other.
Right.
You know, they're trying to beat the heck out of each other. But yet in the longer runs, everybody's, as you said, there to support each other.
You can go out on a longer run and talk for 3 or 4 hours and
yeah.
It makes the time go by a lot faster.
And, well, then it serves an interesting social function as well, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So let's talk about your longer runs. Surely physiologically you have to do some things. So like you have to eat on the run, you have to refuel.
Right.
So what do you do with that? I think the idea of eating while you're exercising is foreign to a lot of people.
And it is something fairly unique, especially the ultra-distance running, because, again, you may be out there for anywhere from 12 hours to maybe a couple of days, just depending on the event. And what happens, what I found through experience, is that when you eat, when you're exercising, your body will take a lot of the blood to go to your digestive system to break down the food, which is going to limit some of the muscles, some of the blood that your muscles are going to be receiving. And so that can hinder performance a little bit. But if you eat some while you're training, what I found over a period of time, the amount of blood that's probably going to your stomach for this is reduced a little bit.
Mm.
And so you'll have more blood that's going to your muscles. And so it doesn't hinder performance as well. And you learn early on, too, is what food really works best for you.
Mm.
You know, some people like to have a variety of food, which is me, and variety of drink.
So do you like eat broccoli and celery as you run?
Donuts. No, I'm kidding. I'll eat fruit. I like good old bag of M&Ms.
Mm.
Like some salty food. What I found, salty food really helps my stomach from getting so upset. And I'm a big milk endorser. I really love milk.
While you're running?
Yes, on an endurance event. What I found, it has good nutrients, and as well, it's kind of soothing to the stomach. Matter of fact, when we did the Appalachian Trail, my wife would meet me at road crossings, wherever there was a place, and we kept several cases of Ensure. And so I would have an Ensure, had good calories, good nutrition, but yet it was easy to drink and easy on the stomach. And so I think milk is good for you.
Now, and you bring up your Appalachian Trail adventure.
Uh-huh.
Did you just decide to do that one day?
Yeah. We were living in Virginia at the time, and our house was only about 2 miles from the Appalachian Trail.
Mm.
And so I did a lot of training on the Appalachian Trail. And I had a friend that had run the Appalachian Trail several years earlier. And he said, "Why don't you do it, Mike?" I said, "Okay." And so there was no real reason of doing it. We started out, even though did run it fairly fast. I mean, relative.
Yeah, you can't beat the 6 fastest time.
Yeah, but we had fun. We would start every morning at 6 a.m. And we had every day, it was all planned out. And we would end the day, and I would make sure I would end the day early enough that my wife and I would have a chance to go do some things in the evening.
Mm-hmm.
For example, when we were in New York, in the state of New York, we stopped early enough one afternoon to go in New York City, Times Square, and have a hot dog.
Mm.
It's like, hey, that's what everybody should do when you're in New York. And so we did, we did stuff all along the way, which made it a little bit more enjoyable. I think I could have finished it a few days earlier, but we had... Most of the time we had fun going up.
Yeah. You bring up an important point, and that's the support from your spouse. I know when I was doing this kind of stuff, if Faith hadn't been a part of that, it would have been almost impossible to do.
Well, that's where I'm blessed, because my wife, Judy, she's about as adventuresome as I am, is that I could go home this afternoon and say, hey, let's go do a race in California this weekend. And she'd say, okay, let's go. And so I think having a spouse or having family that's supportive of what you're doing makes it a lot easier. I think it would be very difficult if you had family members that were not into activity as much as we are. I think it just make it really difficult to be able to do it. But, I could go home. A lot of times we go out, we'll hit tennis ball out in the street. I'm not endorsing that, but we live on a cul-de-sac where there's not any traffic.
Yeah.
And we don't have a tennis court, so we'll go out in the street and hit a tennis ball back and forth. Or we have a basketball court or basketball goal in our driveway. We'll go out and shoot some hoop.
So it's
fun having an active family.
I was going to say you're active most of the time.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah. We talked about the food, eating while you run. Let's talk about the logistics of doing something like that, because I don't think a lot of people appreciate what you have to kind of plan for to do that.
I think the logistics is the hardest part of it.
Yeah.
And again, talking about family, I was lucky that my wife she loves what they call them crewing, the support crew. She absolutely loves to crew. Mm-hmm. Now, I've crewed for friends who were doing ultras, and I thought it was very difficult. I thought running it was a lot easier than crewing for someone, but I'm lucky in that she loves to crew. Mm. And so before an ultra, depending on, you know, what type of race it is or whatever, you really have to sit down thinking about, you know, if you're in an event that's going to last 24 hours, well, depending on where it is, the weather can change quite a bit in a 24-hour period of time. Mm-hmm. It may be raining. If you're doing a race in Colorado, even in the summer, you may see some sleet or snow, get hot. So you really have to think about all the different conditions that you're going to be facing in that period of time and be prepared. Hopefully you won't need all of it. You need it there just in case you do.
And you do things like regularly change your shoes during the race?
Again, I kind of go, I always have a couple extra pair and even sometimes different types of shoes in case I get a hot spot, you know, thinking might be rubbing a blister or whatever. But what I usually do is if a pair of shoes is working, I don't change them.
Just stay with it.
If it's working, I stay with it.
Yeah, interesting. What's been your hardest ultra? Which is the one that you've done that you probably would never do again?
The hardest ultra, now, that's an interesting question because when you say the hardest ultra, it may not necessarily be the most difficult in terrain. I mean, I've done like the Badwater Ultra Marathon, which starts in Death Valley, California. Mm-hmm. And back when I did it, it actually went to the top of Mount Whitney. Mm. So it went from the lowest point in the continental U.S. to the highest point in the continental U.S.
It doesn't anymore?
And it's 154 miles then.
Wow.
And they shortened it since then because the National Park Service had some problems with the number of people that was doing it on the trail going up Mount Whitney. So they've shortened it to just 135 miles. So you go to the base of the mountain. Mm. When we start in Death Valley, if I remember right, I think that the air temperature, not the heat coming off the road or whatever, but it's 117 degrees.
Wow. And yeah, because that's on pavement when it starts, isn't it?
Yes, it's pavement all the way until you get to the base of Mount Whitney in July.
It's very warm.
They want to make it challenging.
It sounds like
it. Yeah. So when you say the most difficult, you say, oh, it's got to be that. No. 1 year I did the Western States 100-miler out in California. And this shows you how long ago it was. I was in graduate school here at A&M, and it was in July, and I flew out on Friday afternoon, and the race starts at 5 o'clock on Saturday morning. Mm. And so I flew into San Francisco, rented a car, got there, you know, in the middle of the night, got up about 3 o'clock, ran the race. It's 100 miles, and at the one-mile mark, put my hands on my knees. I go, I'm tired. I don't feel good.
Ooh.
It was terrible.
1 mile down.
So one down, 99 to go.
Oh, wow.
And I was looking up, and the sun was starting to come over the hills. And I'm like, okay, I've got 99 more miles to go. Wow. And I tried everything you could. I would pick up the pace, slow down the pace, eat, not eat, drink a lot, not drink a lot. I tried everything that possible. It got worse every mile.
Really?
But I finished. And I remember when I was finishing, the sun was coming up again. And I look over and I see the sun starting to come up. I'm going, that's the second sunrise I've seen during this race. So that was my most difficult. But what I found is the more difficult it is, you know, not necessarily the course, but you fight through something that's not fun.
Right.
And you do it. That's when you get a sense of accomplishment. It'd been easy just to quit after 1 mile.
Right. And how do you fight through that pain or that discomfort?
I just make up my mind when I start, I'm going to finish. What I found, even more realistic for some people out there that might be listening that do 5Ks or they're doing a 1 mile run.
Sure.
The whole thing may not be pleasant. I remember Bill Rogers years ago who had won Boston Marathon about 5 or 6 times in a row. Someone asked him, did you ever think about quitting during the course? He said, if I don't ask myself if I'm going to quit at least one time during the race, I'm not running fast enough.
Mm.
And so those things cross your mind almost any race, any run that you do, but you just have to say, hey, I'm not going to quit.
And just go on.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about extreme races.
Now we're talking fun.
Yeah.
I do, not as many, but I do because I enjoy getting out in nature, these multi-day adventure races where if you really like doing wild stuff, it's really fun.
Yeah.
They can range anywhere. They have shorter versions of it that may only be 12 hours. And then they have some that can last as much as a week, depending on what you want to do. But you can do things such as, like in a single event, you can do like running, orienteering, where you're following a map trying to get to a checkpoint, canoeing, some kayaking, rock climbing, rappelling, you name it. It can have just a variety of activities within it. And it's really a blast. I kind of like doing different things. And, like, you know, I like road races. I like trail races. And then I like to throw in a few of the adventure races every once in a while. Probably the most fun I've ever had in a run was last March. Did an adventure race outside of Toronto, Canada. Mm. And it was a team race. There were three of us. I have two colleagues that live in Virginia that we have a team. We went up and did this adventure race where it was cross-country skiing, ice climbing, and snowshoeing, several, all of it winter, because March in Toronto is a little bit chillier than March in College Station. And I'd never been on a pair of snowshoes before.
Until that point.
Until that day. Yeah, yeah, we're putting them on going. And it's probably been years since I've done some cross-country skiing.
Yeah.
And it was a blast. It was so beautiful. We did quite well, but we did it because it was fun, because it was something new. And I think that's kind of part of a lot of people who do these weird sort of events. It's a sense of adventure.
Right.
And it's like, I always said, if you had a tree out in the yard and you decide, hey, I'm going to have a 12-hour run around that tree and I'm going to charge $50 for people to do it, there'd be some people coming out.
There'd be people do it.
Yeah. There's some crazy people out there.
Well, speaking of crazy people, though, you told me about a race called Med Wars.
Yeah.
Can you explain a little bit about what Med Wars are?
Again, something different. I do have one of the things I do on the side is work as a paramedic. Mm-hmm. It really kind of goes well with health kinesiology, some of the classes that I teach. So I do that on the side, mainly for fun, to help people. They have this series called Med War, and it's adventure races. They have them all across the United States and Canada. Matter of fact, the one I was telling you about in Canada was a Med War race. Mm. And at the checkpoints, instead of just checking in and out, they have a medical scenario set up. And they'll have patients there that have different medical problems or trauma, and you treat them.
Hmm.
And they don't tell you what to do, and you have to carry your own equipment, any kind of trauma equipment, medicines. That you, it's up to you what you bring, but the more you bring, the more it's going to slow you down.
Yeah.
So you have to kind of, you know, guess at what you...
The ultimate first aid kit, huh?
Yeah, the ultimate first aid kit. So you'd get on the scene, and you would treat whatever the scene was, and they would have a group of evaluators there to evaluate how you treat it.
Hmm.
And then at the end of the race, what they would do is usually you'd have anywhere from 10 to 12 checkpoints during this 12-hour event. And at the end of the race, you got time added to your overall finishing time based on your treatments. Hmm. So if you treated the people accordingly the way that it should be, you may not get much time added to your finishing time. So what's interesting about it, even though, say, you're the first place team that finishes the line, you're an hour in front of the second place team, well, if the other team treated their patients in a better way, they may beat you because they'll have less time added.
If you killed all your patients, you're going to lose.
If you kill them, you're probably going to, you're probably not going to win. Yeah.
Well, that's an interesting twist.
I haven't heard that. It's really kind of fun.
Yeah.
And like our team, I have one person that's on the team who's a few years older than I am. And then the third person on our team is just a few years younger. So we're the geriatric team. You know, we're competing against a lot of them are med students. You know, they're in their 20s. And so there's been several events where we've gone and we've come in third or fourth overall, but we wind up winning because we treated them better.
Your patients got up and walked off after the end.
Yeah, we saved someone along the way.
So are there many of these races? We hear about marathons all the time, but are there a lot of ultras? How do we find out about it? If somebody's listening and says, you know, I'd like to try one of those.
Okay. Like I said, I've been doing it for so long. It's really come a long way. Mm. Back in the good old days, there just wasn't much publicity about it. It was hard to find anything. But now with the internet, there's an ultra site that's really good. It's called Ultra Running. Mm. It's one word, ultrarunning.com. And it's an internet site that if you get on it and click on the calendar, it has a list of probably over 100 ultra marathon events across the United States listed on it. And it has hot links on those races where you can get information. So the Ultra Running calendar is a very good site.
Cool.
Now, that's not all-inclusive, but it covers the majority of the more better-known races in the U.S.
Right. And for our listeners, we'll put a link to that up on the show notes on the website so you can just click to it and go. So, but there are enough races now that you don't have to travel long distances.
No, matter of fact, here in College Station, They have a 50-miler, a 50K, a 100-miler, for instance, in Huntsville, which is only 50, you know, a little over 50 miles away.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have to travel very far. And with gas prices the way they are and things like this, you can it's not a big financial burden to go over and do it. But they have them in every state. It's really gotten a lot more popular.
Heck, if you can run 100 miles, why drive your car?
That's right. Save on the gas.
That saved the gas. That's right.
50-something miles over there, just, you know, that'd be a good warm-up.
You have to start early, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's kind of sick, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
We are running out of time, Mike. As we always do, we tell our guests, do you have a take-home message? If you want people to remember one thing from this podcast, what would that be?
Get out, do something, and have fun doing it.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent take-home message.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you so much for taking the time
today
to be with us today. And for those of you listening, you may be waiting with bated breath for the question of the day. And so here's Justin.
So what is the definition of an ultra run?
So that's the question of the week. If you be the first one to answer, send us the answer via email to the email address on the website, and you'll win one of those nifty, nifty Huffines T-shirts. So be the first in your neighborhood. Dr. Samlin, I think we need to hook you up with one, don't we?
Sounds good.
So you can wear it out on the trail. Thank you again for being with
you
us today.
Thanks for having me.
And thank you all for taking the time to download us and be with us this week. We look forward to seeing you next week, or hopefully you'll look forward to hearing us next week. In the meantime, we hope that you are active and healthy.
The Sports Medicine Podcast is produced by Justin Dobson and licensed by the Huffines Institute at Texas A&M under a Creative Commons 3.0 license. You can share it as much as you want, and you can talk or blog about it all you want. Just don't change it or charge money for it. This podcast is made possible by support from the Omar Smith family and the Sidney and J.L. Huffines family. Our music was composed, performed, and graciously provided by Dave Zeltner Productions, your source for quality music and music production since 1992. Find them at www.davidzeltner.com. Our opening and closing credits were provided by John Miles Productions at johnmilesproductions.com. If you have questions or comments, please send them to huffinespodcast@hlkn.tamu.edu. From all of us at the Huffines Institute, we hope you have an active and healthy week.